everyone, and welcome to the October 2011 meeting of WMATA Riders Advisory Council. I call the meeting to order. Our first item on the agenda is the public comment period. We welcome comments from the public, and each person is given 2 minutes to speak. I think we have one person signed up.
Yeah, we have Michael Lewis.
Mr. Lewis, if you come to the microphone right here.
And just make sure the mic's on. Okay.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is my second time I've been in the last 3 or 4 years disabled. I have to without public transportation. Several months ago, they offered me a seat. Gentlemen, cut me off. Anyone that was right. Someone else got between us, but it also escalated to a point where I got off at my stop. He met me at the elevator. He confronted me in the elevator. He literally wanted to fight me. We had a few words. He left, called me by names, went back down on the lower level. Now, this happened in Metro Center. Usually a policeman or persons of the police department, usually my station. It took me 45 minutes to get there. That was my call. Now, this thing is escalated further to a point where I got stabbed and shot. So later on, found out that the camera on that video wasn't working. I went to watch and I called and talked to Metro several times about this. Why do they continue to discriminate against people with disabilities? I've seen old ladies pushed shoved to the side. I've seen a blind man have his cane kicked out from under them. I'm going to have my wrist broke this morning because people were running literally, full blast off the subway. If I get hurt on the Metro system, what's going to happen to me? Who's going to take care of it? How do I take care of that situation, especially if the cameras are not working? Personnel don't really care. I had two other incidences with medical personnel. I got closed up in the subway train door because I wasn't moving fast enough. I actually had a medical personnel subway conductor tell me they weren't going to wait for me because I'm moving too slow. I mean, back in the day, yeah, I could have caught the train and after whatever the case such an application. I'm wondering if I'm going through this, what other people with disabilities are going through, especially the lady in the girl that's stuck on an elevator for 2.5 hours. Who was the attendant? It wasn't working. This was after a whole hell of a lot better. Now I've asked them to advertise more so, to let people know that there is a law for people with disabilities. And it's a federal law. And Metro doesn't have anything to really enforce it with any weight. And that's their job. And if I got to rely on myself for protection, we would have been a very, very sad state. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Have you made complaints to the police about the assaults?
Yes, I have. And like I said, my question is, why is Metro discriminated against people with disabilities? Now, we have a document. And I've got no response. I'm going to call Police Chief Michael Claiborne, talk to the lady who was in the phone at the time. And someone called, I don't know who it was, they left a message on my answer. I guess it was like second in command or something of that nature. I called them back and never got a reply. I've gone to the media, it's not newsworthiness. I ended up as a casualty or statistic. I'm not trying to do that. I think it needs to go into more like. You sell these other advertisements for all the different companies. And, you know, folks are under the impression that what you have designated, seeing for people with disabilities, is just that location. Well, on the older trains, when I sit down in the spot where they have the bar in the center of the aisle, I take terrible beating across my knees and my face. People with bags, folks rushing to get on the train, pushing and shoving. It's sad.
Who's Mr. Sheehan?
My name is Pat Sheehan, I chair the Accessibility Advisory Committee, and this committee is an assistant committee to the RAC. We deal with issues specifically that deal with seniors and people with disabilities. I guess there's two things I would say. One is, we had our meeting on Monday, we have our meeting on the first Monday of the month, 5:30 to 7:30 in this room. So if you would like to come next month and give us specific information on your issues, we will make sure, as far as action items are concerned, that they're addressed. If you don't want to wait that long, then you want to still get them addressed and make sure that your questions are answered specifically on the issues, specific issues you raised. I would address them to ckent@lamada.com, and you can CC me at pat.sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, at va.gov, because some of the issues that you raised, we can look into. Others, like priority seating on the subway cars, are things that we need constant education on. But as far as giving courteous information to individuals with disabilities and making sure that they get a ride, that they feel safe, that's something that my committee stresses and would like to be able to follow up on your issues.
Could you repeat that information again, please?
Sure. You want my email address?
Yes.
Okay. It's pat.sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, at va.gov. And the other individual that you can CC on that is ckent@lamada.com. I chair the Accessibility Advisory Committee, and serve on this committee as a subject matter expert for disability issues. So, but in particular reference to the issues that you raised, would like to be able to investigate them and get you some answers and some satisfaction.
Yes, because the last time I was down here was an altercation where the police arrived late, but the metro followed up by sending investigators, and my job and discussed it in detail.
Okay.
30 days after that same episode, the same location, the same person showed up again. And I went to the kiosk, and the police arrived and arrested the gentleman, found out he had a history of dealing with the film. This particular episode, it was surprising to me because, I mean, I did keep my head on when I was taught that in the military. But to actually have somebody threaten me over a seat that was offered to me because of my history, that was what the surprising part was.
Right.
And then turn around and have this gentleman follow me to the elevator to confront me in an enclosed space. Okay. Something got to give.
Right, I agree. And you know the issue concerning priority seating on the subway, where the seats are, where they all exist. But as far as enforcement goes, that would be something that I think that my committee might like to look into to make sure that doesn't happen.
But it needs to be done because, first of all, the episodes that I go through and myself and other people with disabilities, it's actually assault. If you push yourself somebody with disability out of the way, put your hands on a person. Okay, and then like I stated earlier, I almost got my wrist broke this morning. It's tiresome, but where's your other time?
Right, understood.
Thank you, Mr. Patrick. I know that will, the solution you offered will be an effective one. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. I'm sorry to hear of your situation, but thank you for coming down and addressing the public. We now move to the approval of agenda. So if there are no objections to the agenda, we'll consider it consent. Seeing none, it's moved. You have in front of you the guest meeting minutes. We're not going to look at them tonight or approve them tonight, but we'll you have them in hand, so you have a month to read them. And we'll look at them next month. We now have a presentation. We have two guests for us tonight who are going to present on an item that is going to the board in mid-October, having to do with communications, dealing with the blue and yellow line service realignment. Our two guests tonight are Jennifer Green for the Department of Communications, Marketing, and Customer Service, and Michael Eichler from the Department of Long Range Planning. So we're delighted to have you both with us and looking forward to your presentation.
Thanks for that introduction, Mike. Again, my name is Michael Eichler. I'm with the Office of Long Range Planning, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some changes to the blue and yellow line service, and then we're going to switch over to Jennifer for a minute. She's going to talk about station naming, and then we're going to go back to me to discuss station signage. So that'll be the general flow. I'm going to be the impression that everyone here has probably heard of this blue yellow service realignment that we're doing. I'm completely new to that concept, so I'm just going to show you. You know, familiar with it. The general idea is that we're going to try to address three different issues with this second slide. Right? There is a lot of crowding at the Roslyn portal where the trains, the blue and orange trains, merge together at Roslyn. And also the trains themselves, the orange trains are crowded and blue light. But we can't put any more trains through because the orange trains, the blue trains, currently have the number of trains that we can get through at the Roslyn. Additionally, we're also seeing that our ridership and our market is changing, that jobs are moving towards the eastern part of the core. And as that happens, the demand for trips is also moving eastward. And then we're also transitioning to future dollar rail service. So on the next slide, we'll talk more specifically about the peaker crowding that we're looking to address. You can see everyone here has probably experienced blue point packed trains, packed platforms. I myself in my daily commute experience it quite often. You'll notice here, we look at our maximum load points, which is the second column in that table, is just a place on the line where the trains are the most full. And so the orange line right now is between Courthouse and Roslyn. So as those trains are on their way into Roslyn, they're hitting their max load point, 160 so far. We have standards not to exceed 120 persons per car, but that is over our desired load of 106. So how can we add more trains to the orange line to get that number lower? Well, if we are already at our maximum number of trains going through Roslyn portal, maybe we need to make some more orange, some of those orange, and reduce the number of blue line trains. We look at the next slide where there's an illustration of change in morning exits as average weekday ridership from the east side of the region to the west side of the region. On the screen, the blue is the western side and the red is the eastern side. And you can see the little table on the upper right corner that the eastern side of the core has received 17% growth since 2004, but the western side has received 3% growth. Not to say it's not growing, but the eastern portion is growing faster. So, for example, Gallery Place, Chinatown, which many of you may have used to be here, used to be a relatively calm station, and over the past, you know, with Verizon Center and all the developments, basketball, all of that's going on, the ridership of that station has ramped up significantly. So you can see that that station alone has had a 57% increase in ridership since 2004. The third point is that we are opening up Ellis service, and from we'll probably hear in a minute, we're going to officially calling it Silver Line. And when that comes online, those trains are not going to just be stopping at East Wall Church, where the Silver Line merges into an existing rail line. They'll actually be running all the way to Stadium Armory. And in order to make room on that corridor for a third color and for a third series of trains, we have to continue to find some sort of find something to do to find room for them. And because the orange is already pretty pretty well full, or thinking about shipping some glue on here. So there's three different reasons for it. The following slide will show what the new service plan is going to be. And the general idea is that we are going to take some trains that are currently going from Franconia, Springfield to Fargo, currently called blue. We're going to start calling them yellow, and for the peak period only, I believe it's every third train that leaves Franconia is now going to go to Greenbelt over the Yellow Line Bridge. So we're shipping 3 trains per hour again, every third train to go across the Yellow Line Bridge, and then basically turn to the Yellow Line train terminating at Greenbelt. In order to make up that lost capacity on Craft Core, we're also going to run some trains between West Falls Church and Largo Town Center that will help make up for the lost blue lines, and we'll be calling those orange line trains. So what this means, though, is that now we have the need to illustrate some new services on the map. So if you're standing on Main Street and the yellow line train comes, you don't scratch your head and say, what's the yellow line train doing? This is a blue line platform. So we plan on updating the map this year in a little bit to illustrate these peak-only services. And again, this is only during the peak period. Will not, in fact, be off-peak or the weekend at all. I'm going to go to the next slide. This is a picture of the service pattern that we're anticipating having on the new service plan. The section above is the current service, where we have six minute service on yellow, blue, and orange. And what we'll be doing is turning the blue line, every third train will go and become yellow and go over the bridge. So it's the headway there for the blue line will now be a 6:12. So 6 minute wait, and a 6 minute wait, and then the yellow line train will come 6 minutes later, and then you wait again, and then the 12, and then the blue line train will come. So we'll, an uneven headway here on the blue line, but especially we can do it on the 10 more trains over the yellow line bridge. So I'm just going to discuss with you our communications first.
Good evening. As I will indicate, with these new service patterns, there is definitely a need to make sure the map reflects that in order to help customers along with their journey. So I want to talk a little bit about the communications approach that we're doing. One, we want to involve customers early and often. Throughout this process, both with the map and then station names, part of that process, we started almost over a year ago, gathering input and feedback from various groups, including this one. We were here a couple months ago talking about station names. So we want to make sure that we hear customers really often so we get the best product at the end of the day. We also need to make sure that this launch is successful in the fact that customers know what to do. Like Michael said, if you're in Main Street, you know to expect the yellow line train. And that's where communication is very important, to make sure customers understand how the new service patterns work. We need to make sure we understand how customers hear us. What do they understand? What's the best way to communicate with them? So we've done a lot of research, best ways to make sure people know about the service names and that their journey is successful. Again, there are a lot of touch points on the customer journey, the visual, audio announcements, station agents. So we want to make sure that everyone's informed as we go to make the change. I'm going to focus on rider benefits. Why is this important? How does this benefit our customers? So that's also a key component of the communications plan. As well as taking a staged approach. We've been doing a lot of planning work for the service change from a communication standpoint. We'll start to introduce the details as we get closer to the service launch. And then what we want to do is make sure during the launch and then after the launch that the messages are sustained. We want to get constant feedback to make sure that those messages are successful. People can complete their journeys without losing that hassle, basically. So that's our approach to the communication side of this. Next slide. Kind of touch on some of these, but our progress to date included, again, doing some extensive customer research and talking about the blue-yellow service plan, the map, and station signs, station names, and station signs. We had over 20,000 people participate in our research. That includes some of our surveys, our focus groups, also the work that Greater Washington has done. So we want to make sure, again, like I said, getting customer input early and often will give us the best product at the end of the day. So that's what we want to make sure that we did. From our research findings, as I mentioned, we developed a three-stage communication plan that I outlined. We also have developed map options. I'll talk about those in a few minutes, and as well as station signage options. So the service plan, we definitely have to update our signage to make sure that people can have a easier way of wayfinding throughout the system. I'm actually going to speak this up, because I know we're a little pressed for time, so pass on, I think, goes to the next map for me, and I'm going to discuss the research findings with the map in front of you. As I mentioned, we've been doing research for over a year on the blue line, the blue-yellow realignment, the Ellis extension, station name of the map. What we learned is people like our current map. People feel very strongly about our map. It's very iconic, it's a symbol to them. They use it for wayfinding, and they want to keep it simple. They value, they want it clutter-free. So we give them enough information to get them through their journey successfully, but at least not have to forget. That's sort of the end goal for us here. So when it comes to blue-yellow, which you see here on the map, the dashed line is a little hard to see on the screen. The yellow line extension, the green belt, the orange, the Largo, and the yellow starting in Franklin County Springfield. People understood what the dashed line meant. So that indicates peak service, they understand, and they're okay with it. It's not cluttering the map too much. We want to make sure we represent the new service in a way that is easily understood. So most people is the silver line. So that's one of the things that we tested through customer research. The one thing our customers are concerned about is showing the silver line now. People don't want to see things that aren't really in service yet, because it's confusing for the record. So that made a lot of sense to us too. The major complaint that we received is the station names are way too long. Especially for those who don't take the system every day, it can be kind of confusing. You've got 3 to 4 names per station to have to remember. So that was one of the things that we learned. To address that, we tested the primary and secondary approach to displaying the station names. Whereas what we asked was, what do you call this particular station? And so, for example, I will use Gallery Place Chinatown. Now, our customer research, we found that people usually refer to this Gallery Place. They don't usually often say Gallery Place Chinatown. Or West Falls Church, they don't usually say West Falls Church, BCBTA. So we started doing some research around what people call the stations, and that's how we did the approach to the primary secondary display. We tested icons, so instead of just the station dot sort of on the map, we put little icons in some of the station dots, like the Capitol Building, for instance, or Fountain of the Lamont, and people had some reservations about using icons as wayfinding, so they did tell us if you're going to use them sparingly. Don't cover the map in a bunch of icons instead of station dots. They also wanted to see hours of operation. That's the one thing our map doesn't have today. They thought it would be very useful in the future if we had operating times, including with our rush hour. So we thought that would be helpful. So from the map, and taking a look at reviewing that for the service reason, we also wanted to take a look at our station name policy. As I mentioned, I went to this group a couple of months ago to introduce the idea of station name policy and getting some feedback from this particular group about how we should either reaffirm our policy, make some tweaks to the policy, and what we heard was, you know, stations give a sense of place for a lot of people. They represent community, they represent particular groups, and that was very sacred to a lot of people. They do like free things. The customers, even non-writers, said that free things are easier to remember, they're easier to use to navigate the system. They like the use of landmarks and names, but only if they're within walking distance. Typically, walking distance means no more than a half mile for most people, or basically a 10-15 minute walk. For the jurisdictions, they are required to complete community input, but the one thing that was missing was customer research. So while the community support activities were being done in the various jurisdictions, there was no research component to kind of test proposals and things like that. So we went back and added that. And for the most part, most people said they're not really interested in naming rights. They don't necessarily want to see the McDonald's station somewhere. That was a direct quote from research. So yeah, that was a very sensitive issue for a lot of folks that we So on the next two slides, I'm going to go over basically the, we received several proposals for name changes from the various jurisdictions. And here's a summary of one, the proposed name itself. The next column is policy issues, whether or not community support activities have been done, how it has to have the research in the final column here, character limits and things like that. And so as we go through these, I want you guys to be thinking about what your input is on some of these proposed names, because I want to make sure I get to them before I get that name before I leave today. The first one is New York Avenue slash Doma. That would be the primary and the secondary Gallaudet University. As you can see, it's over the character limit, but it's actually still shorter than what we use today for the New York Avenue station. We don't have any direct funding commitments, which is a requirement. We have a possible third-party funding commitment, but Metro itself cannot accept or enter into an agreement with a third party. The funding has to come directly from the jurisdiction. That's sort of an issue with this particular fund.
Sorry, just to clarify, the funding, the jurisdictions have to pay for the change, that's what you mean by no direct funding?
Correct. So the third party is committed, possibly committed to funding it, but what happens is the third party would pay the jurisdiction, and the jurisdiction have to enter into the agreement with Metro. Metro itself cannot enter into the financial contract with a third party when it comes to a station.
And so, like, for these, the third party is like the NOAA bid or something like that?
Right.
Gotcha.
That's the third party.
Thanks.
Sure, we'll do it. The next one is Forest Glen Holy Cross Hospital. Again, this is over the 19 character limit is 31. Again, third party money commitment. We also hit the commercial naming rights issue on this one. Smithsonian and the National Mall is the secondary. So the character limit, third party commitment, and direct funding. And as you can see, some of these are receiving favorable reviews. Smithsonian National Mall. NOMA didn't test very well, customer research. We go to the next slide. The next proposed name is Waterfront Dash Arena Stage. Again, over the character limit, some funding issues, commercial naming rights. Some people like it, some people didn't in our research. ABR Ballpark is the next one. It does meet the character limit, but there's no direct funding commitment as of today. And it did receive favorable reviews in our customer research effort. And the last one is King Street Dash Old Town. It meets the character limit. The funding has been committed from the jurisdiction. And it received major reviews in our customer research. So the next slide is just the next steps here. We don't have any staff recommendations today because we are still in talks with some of the jurisdictions. And so we don't have a final set of proposals. Some of these policy issues may be addressed before next week, so we don't have a final set of recommendations today. And I also want to get your input as well. Since we're still in flux on this. So I want to make sure that we get an opportunity to comment if we had any. So again, next week, we'll make our staff recommendations to the Customer Service Operations Committee. And then the board will approve the final set of station name changes on the 27th of October. And I'm going to hand it back over to Michael, and he can segue into the signage issue that we're going to need to deal with.
Thanks, Amber. So we're changing the service patterns, and we're changing the map, and we're going to adopt a new primary secondary naming mechanism for our stations. Well, not all of those impact the map, and they impact the way the service itself runs, but what about the actual inside of the station? Don't we make some changes there as well? And the answer is, of course we do. And so we're keeping those pieces in mind. We currently have assessed the number of signage and map, signage changes that are required, and also there's a rail system map in every rail car, so there's multiple there in every station. So every place that a station name or a line color, or red, green, sorry, just green, yellow, or orange, basically, or green, yellow, orange, and a little blue, we're going to have to look at those signs. Look at those stations and what we need to do in order to make everything consistent. So, if you want to look at slide 17, which is where we have an outdoor sign. This is a sign that's actually mounted onto the vault wall, and it's in both stations with center platforms, as well as stations with side platform. The side of the top is showing what our current, or the side of the top shows what our current naming standards would produce, given, given the current system, actually, that's what the sign says right now. It actually will update the current standards. If the sign below introduces not only the primary and secondary concept, but then it also acknowledges that sometimes the yellow line does go through on the screen field. So you'll notice below, there's a, next to the yellow dot, which is right on your sheet and barely legible on the screen, says two Hutchinson and Franconia Springfield, the other one we mentioned. So you can see that's one way of presenting this information to our customers on outdoor signs, and these are not for the vault walls. The next sign is called Station Ahead. These are very important for customers to determine which side of the platform or which platform they need to wait on for their train. So if you're entering a station as a central platform, you don't have to make any decisions until you get to that platform. Once you're there, then as the train's kind of moving past you in our direction, you need to choose which one to jump on. If you are a side platform station, you need to make that choice while you're still on the mezzanine, and you have your fare card, and then you have to choose whether you're on this escalator or this escalator. So that's where these signs come in, is they help you figure out where to go. And they show you the stations that are ahead of you on your current, on the platform or the direction that you're facing. So again, going with the example of Archives, the top one shows the trains, all the trains that are going from Archives south towards either Branch Avenue, Huntington, and then now Franklin Springfield. You can see that there's a little tail added to this, which on screen, the yellow, it shows two extra stops. And it's on the dash yellow line. You can see that that corresponds to the dash yellow line on the map, where we are showing this people in service going to Franklin Springfield. The one below it is a lot simpler because right now during off-peak periods we have trains that are yellow going to Fort Totten and then they turn around, and then during the peak period we'll have some trains that will go all the way to Greenbelt that will be yellow. And so we're showing that again as dash, but because it's just an extension and not a branch, we don't need to make it swim off to one side or the other. So again, station ahead of us is very important for navigation, for wayfinding, and work out. Anticipating incorporating the new station names as well. We're glad that only the primary station name was on this list, so that instead of being New Street, Afton Earth, Civil War Memorial, Sarasota, which won't fit on one line on this map, or on the station head list, we'll just say East Street. It'll be very easy for someone to understand. And you can see, actually on that graphic, it just says East Street right there. On the next slide, we're talking about the pylon at the entry of the stations. Generally, we have this big pylon, it's a glowing at the top, and it has the name of the station on it, as well as the stripe indicating what color train service that platform. We're imagining that if, for example, at Archives, where you have yellow on service all the time, and sometimes you have to keep on the yellow on service to go somewhere else, there's no point in indicating both the normal yellow line and the yellow line. We'll just put a yellow stripe at the top, which is generally right there. However, for another station, such as Chattison Road, which is normally a blue line station, but may have occasional orange line train during peak periods only, will maintain that dashed orange line that's currently proposed for the map, and putting that on the pylon as well in order to help indicate to people that we may see an orange line train here during peak periods. So, following all of the details of implementation, we are on track now for implementation at the end of June 2011. It's very important that there's a lot of stuff that needs to get done, signs that need to get made, and matters need to get printed, decisions need to get made. There's a variety of challenges before us, and they all start basically when we go to the board next week with this presentation asking for some approvals. On the next slide, you can see an idea for what the budget is going to be. You can see that there's a lot of Oxford maps, charts, signage. And then there's also operating costs for, because this is a net increase in rail service. While we are, moving stuff from yellow to blue, from blue to yellow, we are replacing those with extra orange. So this is a net increase in operating costs. We definitely see that there's a net benefit to this as well. We are providing more service, and we're also unclogging Roslyn and we're making new hotels, and we're better matching our ridership, our service for our ridership is now in Wilson in the future. service, maps, signage, kitchen names.
We'll go around, our tradition is to go around and each person has an opportunity to ask one question or one comment. And then if we have time, we'll go around and say.
Thank you, Frank. Do you mean to say June 2012?
Yes.
Okay. See, I was waiting. Sorry about that, of the test. Mike, just quickly, I assume that with all these changes and any signage that you're working with for people with disabilities, are you consulting the Office of ADA Programs to make sure that signage that needs to be updated for people with disabilities is taken care of?
Yes, we are. And one of the images, which if you're visually, if you have a visual disability, you probably can see, one of the images that we have was showing our tactile signage as well, which is on the pylon throughout the system that not only have the letters, but also the braille indicating which platforms to stand on.
Excellent. That's, I just want to make sure. Yeah. Thank you.
But ADA and civil rights are definitely at the table.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris?
I just wanted to clarify a couple of the details. This change on yellow and blue, will that affect, if I saw this slide, it would look kind of quick, but that will not affect current orange line headways on the Vienna New Carrollton route, correct?
The Vienna New Carrollton itself will not be impacted. However, there will be actually more orange line surface. There will be. We're taking some trains that were there first, we're adding a couple more, and then we're actually providing more consistent service between West Falls Church and Largo.
And does this new alignment change the blue yellow? Does it change when the silver line comes along, or does it remain in place?
We are currently working on the rail plan, or the rail service plan for once Falls opens, but our current idea is actually we will be diverting more blue line than in this current intermediate plan.
And what's the expected trains per hour or whatever the unit is for silver line when it comes on?
That I am not, I think it's going to be about 7, but I'm not prepared to speak on that.
Okay. And we'll pass here very quickly, just Jennifer said feedback on naming. My suggestion is if you can't see it when you come out of the station, don't name it after it.
Right. I just like to comment. I'm glad to hear that you're not considering raising funds by naming the stations after products. So glad to hear that.
Well,
I gotta be completely honest. If I was walking into the system for the first time, this dashed line situation with little dots and zone areas and stuff like that is way too confusing in my book. And I have a very good working knowledge, even now, of the system. My question is two parts. What outreach do you have planned to ensure people know all the time that dashed lines, when related to Metro, equals rush hour service? And as a secondary correlation, why wasn't there any sort of, or maybe there was, discussion about maybe using numbers or, you know, some sort of other system other than a dashed line rather than a solid line. So like the yellow 2 to Franconia Springfield rather than the yellow 1 to Huntington, you know, and then the yellow 2 only runs through Russia or something like that. Can you speak to this?
Yeah, sure. So first one was how we are going to be conveying what this dash line means. Well, first off, there are some precedents throughout rail systems where there are peak-only services or rush-only services that are illustrated by dash lines. The New York Subway MTA uses a dash line to illustrate peak-only services. So it's not as if we, you know, made this up. There is a precedent for that. You'll notice that, well, first off, this map that you're seeing on slide 11 is really small because it's shrunk down to probably 100 of the size that it will be close to the station. If you're capable of seeing the legend, you'll know that the legend, as our roads always have, illustrates that there's service under construction, there's service that, you know, is in service, and we'll also have now this peak-hour reserves. One of the things that we noted was that our customers were wondering, well, what do you mean by peak-hour? And actually, we're going to start using the term rush hours for our service periods. And rush hours will also be indicated on the system map. People have a place to go where say, oh, this is rush only service. And then over here, this is rush hours, you know, the rush hours between system opening at 5 a.m. and 9:30 a.m. and again at 3:37. So we are also working on the ability to illustrate what this dash line means on the signs. I know that it's a concern of staff as well as our designers as well as our customers. Someone who looks it up at one of the station head lists and sees this dash line might not know what it means, but they'll know it's something different. They'll know that, that it's going to be something out of the ordinary versus, you know, another option is just to have it be solid, even though it's only these terms that are there and here. What we, you know, somebody waiting for a train of the green belt when they're waiting for when they're at four o'clock and have one morning morning for that train to arrive. That's the worst situation. So at least the first something, oh, this is something different, they can go find it. They can go, if we can't find the direct way they can get on the signs themselves, they can buy the system map and they can understand what things while they're waiting for the train. Secondly, we have in our earlier version we had a series of focus groups. It's been actually over a year. Around a year, I guess our first set of focus groups where we worked with general people from the general public and the consultants that we used created a variety of different maps that not only included our current lines, but they said, all right, well, this new line from Franconi to Greenbelt, let's just make that its own line. And then this one from Paul's Church to the Largo, let's make that its own line. And then they said, well, let's add icons at the end of the end of the lines and give them whether they were rush only versus versus all day service, and then always comparing the thickness of the lines in order to help illustrate that it's only. So a wide variety of techniques were used to try to illustrate that. But the issue is that each of those different techniques increases the complexity of the map, which decreases people's excitement for working with it since they're so accustomed to this map right now. They don't want to see a lot of change. So the idea was how could we make as small change as possible and still convey the importance of showing service that is existing. We are, again, the map that's in the slides was just what was on the presentation. It was on an online survey that we conducted last month. There are still work in progress, and we are still working on adding some other sorts of features that potentially be of assistance to those with other lines, et cetera. So we're moving forward.
And does is rush hour bus service going to be portrayed as dotted lines on the bus map to stay consistent with the system?
That is a great question and something that I would love to take.
Thanks.
I just had a couple of comments. Regarding the signs on the wall that you see near on the train, if those could be twice as tall, that would be very helpful. They're very hard to see from the train, if we're thinking about this. My other comment is that I think, for me, it's confusing. It would be easier to understand if you called the West Falls Church to Largo Blue. I think that would be easier to understand if I could call it other lines yellow, because it's terminating.
And you know, the issue with that is that if you're on Tom Plaza, where you have now blue line trains in four different directions, or three different directions. You have Blue Line to Largo. So you're saying the orange line went blue. Some people are proposing the yellow with the dashes. They wanted to see that being blue instead. So that would cause problems at we did look at that as an option. And I feel like do you have any recollection of Chris? I think all I can say right now is I know that you and other people have suggested that. I think at one point I suggested that in the process. And somehow I think it shook out of orange, but I think we wanted to show that there was more orange line service. And then because orange line is where the problem is.
And we're adding service to Largo.
Right, and we're also adding service to our bill.
Yes, well, I guess this is tagging along with Carl's question about clear, you know, how clear the map is. I don't have much problem with the map per se, but with the train signage, because it's going to get confusing seeing yellow line, and then I'm going to see, oh, yellow line to where? Because generally speaking, now you just see yellow, and I say it doesn't have a name to it. And if I see a yellow that's going to another place, and it's not where I'm going.
The trains and our system is primarily based on determining an analytic color book, destination of the train. So if you walk into the station, it's the passenger information displays. It'll say YL, and then it says Huntington versus YL to Mount Vernon. So already you're making the choice. You know the destination, one is Huntington, one is Mount Vernon. Also on the sides of the trains, above the windows, there's oval display that has two stripes of color, and then the text of the train's destination. That's how it worked from the beginning. Right now, on the red line, you get on the train and it says Glenmont or Peninsula Reserve. So if you're going to go to Glenmont, you may not want to get on the one that says Peninsula Reserve. That's the way it works right now. People are using the destination of the train in order to figure out whether they want to take that train or not. And so we're just expanding on that by, you know, having basically for most of the people who are taking the yellow line over the bridge from the 4 and the PM, most of the majority are going to get off before the train split anyway, so they just need yellow and get on. Those who may want to go to Huntington are going to have to go before whether it's yellow at Huntington or yellow at Huntington. I understand your concern, but the signs on the front of the train just say the color, but signs on the side of the train have both a stripe of color and the name of the destination station.
I think I'm used to the yellow line trains that are always the old cars that are generally, well, not generally, but a lot of times they're off. So that's.
Yeah, I would encourage you to go up and see.
No. I know, and I've taken the red line, and I am aware of that, but my experience with the yellow line, which is my concern, okay, is that, first of all, and then the second question is, if we're going to increase the yellow line, it's going to be longer now, are we going to increase the number of cars? Because in rush hour, it's only 6 cars. We've never had 8-car trains.
The yellow line itself is not getting longer. We're simply taking some blue line trains and we're running them over the yellow line bridge. Does that make sense?
No. It's going to go, when it gets to Pentagon, or when it gets to Pentagon City, it's going to be double full.
No.
Because it's going to be taking the extra people from Konya that it doesn't take now.
I think it actually be the opposite. That people, if we have more demand to go over the yellow line bridge, then if you're on the corridor between King Street and Pentagon, you're going to see more yellow line trains than we've seen before. You're going to see more yellow line trains, not less. So, you've got blue line, yellow line, they each have 2 stations, and then they merge at King Street and then continue north. And so what we're saying here is that some of those blue line trains are just going to go over the bridge after the Pentagon instead of going to the cemetery and then to Roslyn. So you'll actually see more service between King Street and Pentagon on the yellow line if you want to consider that.
Well,
I'm going to have to look up to get in. That's my problem, because trust me, trying to get into a yellow line train line right now in rush hour in the Pentagon, very difficult.
Well,
and
we'll say there'll be
more yellow line trains in Pentagon than
there were before. Just a reminder to everyone, when you're not speaking, please turn off your mic, number one. Number two, if you do hear feedback, the audio technicians told me once it's that the microphones are too close together. So that's another thing that causes feedback. So like Lorraine and Dawn, I think yours might be too close together. So Lorraine, you might move yours that way a little.
Yes, my question relates to the slide that you didn't go over, which is slide 23, 25 and 44. You show that the passengers for the car would be one after the shift, would be 93, which would be secondary to the red line, still, of course, below your 100 standard. While you weren't prepared to talk about Silver Line, you did note that there could be more of the line trains shifted to make way for the Silver Line. Would that not then put the passengers of the car over 100 and the desired outcome for crowding for the waiting period?
Good night. The plan for phase one of those, the rail operating plan, is still in development, and we're looking at forecasts and ridership, and we're trying to decide what exactly the system is going to look like, but very well might push the number up.
I believe the other comment is, and I've written this line before, obviously my employer shifts to the workplaces on a regular basis. When you ran a mixture of 4 and 6 car trains, that was very crowded at an altitude of the dwell time. Now you're potentially going to be running a mixture of 6 and 8 car trains. And if it's any way possible, try and run a consistent amount of trains. Does that shorten your dwell time? Because that's basically the choke point there, particularly at Farragut West. The quicker you can get a train out of the station there, then the less disruption there is downstream. And having consistent amount of trains helps that, and having inconsistent amount of trains just increases the loading times that are looking for at very ends of the platform. The sooner we're able to go back to automatic train operation, we'll be running to board the last cars in this country.
Thank you, Carol.
I think it would be confusing if you all make them tilted, but we have a line. I'm asking if you have thought about telling someone from Metro to communicate with the different RTM. And I want to make sure that you let Tanya Metro boy is looking out at Kofi and PA. If someone speaking to the PA, I'm sure there would be a lot of confusion for different RTM because we are seeing new stories to be aligned, and I want to keep that in mind.
I guess first of all, I'll just say I think there's a lot here, but I'm just going to raise one point, which is with regard to the way the new map is going to look and the line colors. I guess what I'm hearing is you're designating the line color from the perspective of someone getting on at the fringe and riding into the center. So the idea that if you get on at the very end of what is now the blue line at Largo Town Center, you're getting on a train that will eventually, it's the orange line because it's going to be the orange line once you get downtown and go through downtown. You're riding through what people now think of as a series of blue line stops. You're going to call it the orange line, so someone who gets on at the outskirts is on the red train. And I think what you're going to find, and part of why you're getting some of these comments, because if you're getting on at the center, say at the end of the day when they're coming home from work or whatever, and you're riding outwards, you're now going to have two different orange lines. So the people who are trying to get to New Carrollton are going to get on the orange line, and there's a 50-50 chance they wind up at Largo. So my point, and this is kind of like, I think I'm just kind of trying to articulate some confusion, which there seems to be some lack of connecting on, is it seems like other rail and transit systems deal with these types of issues in part by having a whole rainbow of line colors. Like, I think London probably takes the cake on this and having like probably 30 different colors, including like three, there's like the dark blue, the light blue, the royal blue, the, you know, I don't know, you know, there's like 3 or 4 different blues, there's like 3 or 4 different greens. Couldn't we just kind of inject some pink and purple and a light blue and a burnt orange and some more colors in here? Because I think that might actually make it clearer rather than more confusing.
We studied a lot of these issues based on
to our customers, non-riders, riders, frequent riders, occasional riders. I think the first set of focus groups had 11 different versions of the map. And one of the maps that you're referring to was adoption. We had every possible line color, every segment had a different line color. And what people told us was that, one, it was too confusing, two, it was too cluttered, and that it didn't help them with wayfinding. The simpler we can keep it, the better. So we kept refining and refining. The first option, I think, had probably 7 or 8 to 9 different line colors on it. People just, it was a very visceral reaction from most people that said, we don't want to see paint or brown. What does he do our map? I told you, people love our map as it is. They want to see as little change as possible. So what we worked from that is to say, well, what's the easiest way to understand there's beach service in these particular destinations? And what we learned, one of the first things we studied was the customer journey. How do people make their way through the metro system? And the tool they use, before they get to the station, they check online. When they get to the station, they look at the pylon. When they get through the fare gates, they may stop and look at the map, or maybe even talk to a station manager. But one of the primary ways that people use to get around our system is the destination on the train. And so if you think about it in terms of the red line today, you can stay on the red line platform and have to make the decision whether or not you want to go to Grosvenor or you want to go to Shady Grove. It's going to be the same type of decision if you're staying on the orange line platform and you're going to say, do I want to go to Largo or do I want to go to New Carrollton? And the difference is only that the map will split on the orange line, whereas the red line is still in one direction. So that's the only real difference, but we know that people, our customers, our occasional riders, our tourists, they typically rely on the destination, more so even the line color. We heard that. So some of our research told us that. Just so you know, when we did test a variety of maps and the multiple line colors didn't go over so well. People are accepting of the silver line because I think they've heard it for so long that it's just one of those accepted realities that eventually will be another line color. But everything else we added, they very visible reaction, did not like it. So hopefully that helps explain a little bit as to where we are today and how we got there. So may not alleviate your concern, but at least we tell you a little bit how we got where we are.
Right. And I just wanted to know that, you know, the service plan that's picking up next year, it isn't going to be a 50-50 chance. And there are going to be 3 trains per hour going to, 3 orange trains per hour going to Oconomic, to Largo, and 10 going to Carrollton. So even if it is up to random happens, it'll only be a 30% chance. I don't know if it helps.
Kelsey?
Thanks for your presentation. I just have a few comments. First, I look at the map on page 8 like everyone else, and I don't necessarily care for it, but I don't know how to make it better. I just think one line to be an orange line, another color line to be another color line. And it's just, but you know, the people that matter the most are people that get on these 3 areas that we circled here. So I don't have any suggestions. I just know it took me about 10 minutes for the map to say, well, hey, what's going on? And I don't know if that's a good thing. The other comment I had is about the station outdoor signs. I prefer the first one where you have everything at a larger font. I think, I don't know why someone would need to have that secondary station name. To me, that's just additional info. I just want to know which direction am I going. It's coming real loud and clearly. For the station ahead list, where are you going to place these?
Station ahead lists are actually, there are currently at certain stations they are currently in place. On older stations that haven't been rehabbed recently, they are on the pylons, either on the platform or on the mezzanine, if you have to choose which to go on. For the new standards, the station ahead lists are placed either below the outboard signage on the wall if you have a side platform, so that you can walk up to it really closely and read it. If you have a central platform where the trains are on the side, then these are being mounted above the map case on the platform.
Well, the comment that I had is probably not being on money. I'd really like to see some variation of this station ahead list once you board the train, like maybe in the center of the train, and something that lights up to say, we're at King Street now, we'll be at Bright Road next. And I see that on a lot of other stations. And I'll tell you why I don't like it, because sitting in one of the seats that's reserved for the elderly, and I'm like, why am I looking at, then I realize they're not looking at me, they're looking at the map behind me. And so I feel like something ahead,
and
I would be in people's way, and I would have to jump up, especially for our tourists.
And 7000 series railcars will be having dynamic station headless sign, and it will be even better than these because that car will know what color the train is and it will only show you the stations that have the line that you're on. Whereas this one has to show all stations that are possibly at the end of the line. So, we're close.
Chris? Question about anticipating a lot more transfers between at Fort Cotton and the capacity of the station to handle that. I think a lot of southbound traffic in the morning from Glenmont will opt to choose to transfer to get to Northern Virginia dental line service at Fort Cotton. In one perspective, it will probably be a good thing because on the green yellow line, the lower station level, the seepage there has been a problem. I don't think would have lasted if it was happening in Bethesda. I concur with both larger signs in the stations for persons riding trains to be able to visually see where they are. Actually, lighting on those would be perhaps a violation of the original ethos or aesthetic of the designer, but this is a functioning system and it's gotten old without being graceful. And then the reliability of the side destination markings has to be substantially improved. I used to think that was something in the power of a train operator to change, and this is used for that. So that will be just even more important to have a reliable yield mark of destination on the side of the shop. Thank you.
I'll try to address this quickly. I know that you're currently not really focused in on potential transfer issues at Fort Cotton. Our bigger concern would be that current Blue Line passengers who are going to fare it west may switch to yellow and then transfer at Gallery Place to go to fare it north. And that would be probably because Gallery Place is basically up, right? There's no more capacity there. So we are in the process of conducting a survey that is looking at all passengers actually who are getting on in the morning south and heading up, and asking them which route, where they get on, where they're going, which route they take, and then if service were to change, when they change their path. Now, I find it interesting that we have been very focused on the yellow-blue split. We haven't spent a lot of time thinking about the extra service that we added to the yellow line, green line, to Greenbelt and Fort Cotton. We've been more concerned about people who are taking some service away from. I think that it's a good question to ask of what the impact at Fort Cotton, and I'll make sure that those who are counting the blue-yellow split assessment can get that.
One last thing, I appreciate that said. Red Line trains, and I presume Green Line trains, can announce trouble in their path ahead, it gives people an option at Fort Cotton, and it would be good for the system, to, particularly when there's problems at Gallery Place to alert people that maybe the change at Fort Cotton would be better.
Thank you. Want me to address the other 2 points about? Well, this wheelie design is definitely something we can look into. The lighting is a constant issue with all of us landing on all of our indirect lighting services. But it's a constant struggle, is something that we're looking at. And then I wasn't aware that actually our destination sign is more reliable, so I'll be good at that. I don't have any problem with when a train pulls up and it says Fort Cotton, it's really stopping.
They'll just
say
special. Yeah. They'll just say special. And even the vehicle won't come.
It's happening more, like, try more on the weekends.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, and I'm not sure if I'm directing this to the right folks, but I was just curious if, with these changes, obviously this won't affect huge numbers, but will affect some. There's obviously some folks that have, like, for example, the antidote to Addisgivka. And I was wondering if there were any plans for additional bus service or anything like that that could help.
I would say that we are currently assessing the possibilities. The issue is that, you know, in order to go through, in order to, let's say your commuter currently going from Pentagon to Courthouse. It's only two stops, right? Well, one, two, three stops. You have to transfer. You're going from a travel time of about 6 minutes to travel time of about 18 minutes. If you don't catch that little line, right? So your potential travel time, because you may end up getting there and finding a 12-minute wait, and then get on a train and the issue is that if you were to go on the L line through the city and back out again, that would actually take longer than it would to wait. Because we've done that, we know that the break-even point is somewhere around the very west. So people who prefer to take Blue Line down the very west, but it'll take them a little more time if they go the other way around. The issue, though, is that any sort of bus bridge or connection that we might be able to put in place would have even longer travel time than simply waiting 12 minutes for the Blue Line. So, and the other thing is that, you know, we find that people tend to be more sensitive to waiting time than they are to travel time. So we'll probably find a lot of people say, whatever, I'll just get on the yellow and go to this town, at least I'm moving versus sitting here. I mean, if you think about it, your average speed when you're not going anywhere is your average arrival time when you're not going, when you're not moving, is infinity. And you feel that, whereas if you're moving at least a mile an hour, at least you're going somewhere, you'll get there eventually. So we are looking at alternatives. Part of the study we'll see will help us find out, you know, where people are going, what routes they're taking, and if we need to find any sort of additional. I mean, maybe one solution would be to run a bus on the beltway that would go from Franconia or Van Horn over to West Hall Church, so that instead of actually getting on the Blue Line, we just get on the beltway and transfer to the Orange Line and go in that way, since we're going to have extra service there. Who knows? We're looking at a variety of options.
I'm afraid this also is a problem coming in, and we find, and there's been some improvement thanks to our bus service in Arlington, but the barriers between traveling from North Arlington to South Arlington, for example, are pretty great sometimes, and this could unintentionally
exacerbate. Okay, well, thank you. Really exhausted your time and I see there's a lot of energy around this topic, and we appreciate it very much and your attentiveness and your answers. So Ms. Green and Ms. Eichhorn, thank you.
Feel free to send John an email if we have any additional questions or comments, we'll send them to us.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, the next item on our agenda is the public safety meeting recap and follow-up. Last month, we had our first public safety meeting, our public safety forum. A number of us attended, a number of the public attended. It was chaired very competently and ably by, superbly by Victoria Monica, who was in the kitchen, and they did a great job at the meeting. So we'll ask Victoria to lead this part of the discussion.
This should be pretty short. I think we had a great start to working with transit police and the public. We only had about maybe 6 months from the public, because I'm not sure they start advertising until Monday the 4th, so that was unfortunate. Hopefully we'll have more people in the future. But Chief Avon did represent the police. He has several officers there, which was very helpful. They could actually talk about what was happening in the stations. And I think next time we just need to have better communication with him. It seems that we told his officer the things we wanted to bring up, but his presentation didn't address it. So some things did get lost in translation. So we'll work on that next time. But a few of the issues that were brought up were working with hearing impaired customers and evacuation drills. Someone asked about carrying mace. I thought they were bringing up guns. They did talk a little bit about the coordination with Bishop of Columbia Public Schools and other people who brought up things, safety in suburban parking lots and safety on the safety on the platforms and mezzanines when trains offload during rush hour. What we missed were a few things we asked the police to address, talking about metro access and some things about bus safety. So hopefully we'll hear that in the future. I will say Chief Cable was very nice, and he just told me to email him in the future to make sure things happen. So we'll do that.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Okay. I'd like to concur with Frank on a better job role. And I know it was rather small because it was short notice, partly because of the planning, the lead time on the event as well, I think. But I think it got very well. A thing that really came out for me was the working with youth and schools in terms of that just seemed a lot of people were bringing up that, at that point, and I think that would be interesting for us to take up.
Maybe as a topic for a couple. Any other questions or comments?
I want to mention that BB from the food graph, I'm going to participate in the next forum if we're going to have one.
Thank you. Good idea. Okay. Well, seeing no other comments or questions, just want to again thank Victoria and Joseph for pulling this together. Maybe we should think in the future of further public forums. I thought it was a great event, and people responded positively to it.
I'll talk to Joseph to where the issue should go from here. But I think we do have some issues we can address.
Okay. Next item is the upcoming public hearings. Is there a
Yes, it should be page
35.
All right, page 35. Sorry. So there is the, there's all the dates, times, and locations. I didn't include the entire docket that's available online, and I think I sent you all a link. But it has maps and very specific detailed information about what we're planning to do to these routes that are listed. I don't know if any of you or how many of you are planning on attending these hearings. If you do strongly think that you're going to be at the hearings, if you would be so kind as to let me know, that way I can let the hearing officer know to, you know, recognize that there's somebody from the RAC there. Either myself or my colleagues in the board secretary's office. I mean, that's our responsibility. So. I will be at the hearing on Martin Luther King Avenue and in Farlington.
Does anyone know if they are going to a meeting? Anyone know they're going to October 11th in D.C.?
I think I can make that.
And October 11th in Falls Church? Hyattsville on October 12th, I'll be going to that. Chris, you want to as well?
That's right, at the,
Right.
It's about a block, yeah.
It's not near the shortest block. It is near it, but don't go towards it, go. October 13th in DC, at St. Margaret's, England. And October 13th in Arlington. Transit benefit, next item is transit benefit program changes. Chris, do you want to have a transit benefit with us?
I'll be very brief. Because John has brought to my attention that there's a workaround, and I have not found a great groundswell of enthusiasm for what was perhaps a problem that is not as potent as I had thought it might be. For people who, like me, got transit benefits from our employer, essentially, I needed to take them as paper vouchers so that I could convert those into weekly passes. Without much notice, I learned, I think on a handbill from Metro, that there being an alternative, there was not going to be, that they were going to be discontinued, and now they have been discontinued. And shortly, the few that I have remaining will be collector's items only because they won't be redeemable at Metro. But the workaround John has found is that Commuter Connections is working with Smart Benefits, and I hope to add other agencies to make them more widely available. There's in Montgomery County, there are two offices of TRIPS, one in Silver Spring and one in Bethesda, that would be natural sales points for essentially electronic transfers would happen. And in fact, this can be done, I guess, with the media being mailed. So, Tom put me on to a viable workaround, and I'll keep you appraised as to whether I can spread it to Montgomery County. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. The next item is Riders Council reappointment process.
Just to let you know, you all should have hopefully seen the press release or, know that we're accepting applications until the 16th, whatever week from Sunday is. So if you know of anybody who you think might be a good fit for the council, please pass the information along. If you're up for reappointment, you should have received something from me. An application for reappointment, and the board will make appointments in December. There's really not a great deal to tell, but there's been coverage. Dr. Gridlock noted, and TBD had something, and I think maybe even the Examiner did too. So hopefully we'll get a good crop of people.
We now have questions and comments for the RAC chair and the AAC chair reports, which are in the packet, which over email. So if there's any questions or comments on those?
Could I make a suggestion?
Sure.
I think based on a report that we had from Carol Kissel on Monday concerning the upcoming changes in bus and rail fare structure, I think it would be very important for this committee to invite Carol to come. You know, she's going to make a report with some preliminary recommendations on Thursday, maybe to the November meeting, because within the next few months they're looking at perhaps revising the way the fares are structured part of bus and rail, particularly rail. She presented to our group, which is the first time I've heard this, seven guiding principles that the board believes in, one of them being simplified infrastructure. And I think so it would be very useful for this group to weigh in on some of the thinking that's going on of the future, perhaps future of bus and rail structures.
We did have a presentation back in the springtime on FAIR principles. Are these new ones that they did?
Well, they were seven. I don't remember. But now, along with the FAIR principles that, let's say you had that in the spring, now along with the FAIR principles that I think that they developed a couple of years ago, they have some specific thinking that they developed because of the contract they had in September. So I think that although they don't have anything, you know, concrete to go before the board, although they may have something by January, I still think it would be interesting, and I think this group would find it fascinating to listen to what Carol was thinking about presenting to the board. So just my recommendation, it was a report that was extremely well done. I was very impressed, one of the best reports we've had in quite a while. I think this group would benefit from it. I think she would benefit from expertise on this committee.
Okay, that's a great suggestion.
We had discussed this with staff. I mean, not to overplay this, but they are, in fact, Mr. Eichler, who was here tonight, is working on that study as well, and I think he was planning on coming to the November RAC meeting, but, you know. So, it is somewhat in the works.
Good, thanks, John. But my thinking is just, I think topics that this group would want to weigh in on very important, and extremely well done by Carol. Very important.
Okay, there are no other comments or questions on the reports. We'll go to open mic.
Ron.
Yeah, I was out of town when the meeting occurred with the board members. And I talked to Chris just a second before the meeting. He said he thought they'd gone very well. I was wondering what feedback you had or what your view of it was.
That's a good idea. We should debrief on those meetings. I was at the one with Chris, with Marilyn, board members, and before. Now the board members were there, and it was Chris, Sharon, and myself, and I thought it was a very informative meeting both ways. I think that they got a lot of information from us, and they seemed responsive. I'm sorry that I don't remember her name, but the newest board member from Prince George's County, Artis, afterwards stopped Chris and I and said that she wanted to have further discussions. She's new on the board and she really wants to get as much information as she can.
Just out of curiosity, did you get any feel that some of these new board members are still just kind of learning a lot of this stuff or not? With all these new board members, I kind of wonder if that's an issue, that they're still kind of learning. But do you get any sense of that?
I got the sense that they were interested in informed suggestions, that they did want to hear from us, and that they would take our input seriously. And I asked the Warrens before we started how intense a user he might be. His board resume speaks about this group he's associated with, and he told me that has narrowed down to the point where, in fact, he may have been volunteering his services there. they now allow him space and he's working on a book. I think he's going to devote a lot of time, a lot of energy to Lamar Ward. Offline, I'll tell you about a compliment paid to Michael Lawrence that I thought was kind of talent spoke very well for all parties. He's taken by the government, I guess, because apparently they made some. I would gather they made some kind of agreement that he was going to be, he was going to take a load of energy and time like he's capable of doing. So I was real pleased by that. And I think he's going to be eminently approachable. I've got a feeling that what Frank said, that it went so well that, it doesn't have to, wait for a great period of time before we get
again. When I say that I thought they were responsive is that I felt that, when we made statements, they asked probing questions from that. So they were definitely engaged and seemed genuinely interested. So how about the DC folks at that meeting? Diane and Barb, I think of the only Kelsey was there.
In response to Ron's question, I think that it's two Thomases, two Daves.
Two Toms.
Two Toms. I would say that one of the Toms is definitely still getting up to speed. And he made it very clear when he was speaking, that there's a lot he's very unsure of. He's looking forward to continuing the relationship to build on that and make him a stronger board member. Maybe my perspective on it. I thought it was a good decision. It was dominated by some people more than others. Not grand members.
I think they were fairly clear that they are interested in the input of riders, and particularly sort of a informally defined or sort of imperfectly defined focus group, RAC, DC, RAC members as kind of a source of kind of real world input on what's actually going on with the system and what's where the issues are. I think the challenge is going to be what it has been all along, which is finding a way for very busy board members, very busy RAC members to actually connect on a regular basis and basically determining the communication pathway. Just given the realities of scheduling and just other commitments. That was kind of my feeling. I felt like it was a pretty open-minded mindset from both of them. Like, they were definitely interested in hearing what were saying and weren't necessarily coming to with a lot of preconceptions.
I agree. I thought it was a great meeting, and I also thought that the board members, the two that were there, quickly realized that there's what Lamada can do, but also Lamada needs assistance from DIAT, and that was actually my other question, a better communication with DIAT and a more two-way street, I guess, as far as communication goes. And so that was actually my question. As a DC member of the Ride Advisory Council, what can we do to see better communication, in my case, again, between DI and WMATA, because it seems like when there's a construction project, WMATA doesn't know, means their bus operators don't know, which means the people on the street probably don't know. When their bus is an hour late, like it was last week, because they have Pennsylvania Avenue in one lane, that bus operator is getting cursed out, and it breaks my heart, because there's just this broken loop of communication. And so while I understand we're here to serve WMATA and serve Ride Advisory Council, I think it'd be great for us if we could figure out what we can do to make sure we're not getting the info they need from the other independent transit agencies, to make sure that they're really getting the best ride possible.
And the, one of the Toms suggested that the DC riders establish a more formal relationship with DDOT in an advisory capacity.
DC riders of the Riders Advisory Council.
Correct. The way he was talking sounded like regular meetings or regular outreach or something like that. As sort of a subcommittee that reports to DDOT, which is kind of an interesting suggestion, and he's fairly, I feel like there was a takeaway. John, it wasn't like general counsel going to see if that's even legal or something like that?
Well, I think it was just that we need to reach out, and I've spoken with the DDOT rep on the JCC, Steve Strauss, just to reach out and sort of establish that communication. Mr. Downs, that was the Tom that brought this up, spoke of, setting up a meeting between y'all and the DDOT director, and so, that's a possibility. Mr. Downs seemed to want something a little bit more formal, like a memorandum of understanding. I'm not sure if it needs to go quite that far, but, it just seems getting more lawyers involved and less may not be the best way to go about that, but, DDOT's aware, and I think we need to figure out what the next step is.
So I just wanted to check that if anything has been done to a meeting with the Virginia members. I know that there was a problem scheduling.
Not yet. We've sort of gotten past the hump of the Maryland and the DC members because they're all new. And I know that some members of the RAC, like for example, have met with Mrs. Hines and have met with, Mrs. Hudgens has been here previously. So there wasn't as much of a sense of urgency in getting that scheduled, but it is still hanging out there, as is a meeting with the three federal representatives, for those of you that are in the employ of the federal government, which I think Carl and I totaled this up, and it's like at least eight or nine people on the RAC or on the federal payroll or retired thereof. So stay tuned.
Just for the record, at our meeting, Mark Downey was the Maryland member, and he spoke as a regular user coming in from Virginia, so I would think he would be ever eager to be at a meeting or anything that might involve even others of the federal board members.
Speaking of Virginia board members, John, do you know if there's been any clarity on who's going to be the odd man out of Virginia members?
No, they don't. That definitely does not trickle down to us. Just sure. As some background, at the end of last year's legislative session, Governor McDonnell inserted a provision in the bill that was ultimately passed that requires one of the principal members on the Metro Board to be an appointee of the governor, which is not the case now. There is some legal wrangling right now going back and forth because of the way that Virginia Board members are appointed. They're appointed by this group called the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. There's sort of some underlying tension between Northern Virginians and the governor. There's also the NVTC contends that because of the way its charter is written and the Metro Compact is written, they aren't allowed to appoint a governor's member like he wants them to do. So that is one that's still sort of out there, and I think the lawyers are hashing that out. And then I guess secondly, obviously if they put a governor's appointee on the board, then one member of the board would need to step down. One current Virginia member of the board would need to step down. Don't know who that would be. Don't know if that would change, who's a principal and who's an alternate. Presumably the governor would want a voting member on the board. So would somebody that's voting bump down to being an alternate, and would it trickle down and an alternate get kicked off? I don't know and have not heard.
As for the Sandberg, I think it was, that the governor's also trying to get all the transit agencies in Virginia, because Virginia has multiple, to basically sign an agreement that gives them a board seat, which would be potentially an additional alternate seat. So Virginia may be appointing one principal director and one alternate director, and they're holding funding to any agency that doesn't sign those agreements.
Right, but and Metro is unique in that we operate as part of an interstate compact, as opposed to the other transit agencies that, you know, that don't. And so I think that's been the complication legally from appointing someone to the board.
Yeah, Darva, this is not more recent in the news, obviously, but I spoke with Mary Hines on Thursday after she came from the MBTC meeting, and she just, I asked her where things were at, and she's basically in the case that this town said no further resolve than they were before.
Madam Mayor, just to say, I think Diana pointed out that an important thing, it is hard to get busy schedules together, but I do think that it would be good for the RAC, you know, maybe next year, to start thinking a little earlier about meeting with board members, and I thought it was a good exercise, and I just think that FaceTime with people makes them, it's easier to persuade them when you're persuading them in writing.
John, can we move forward on the Fed meeting?
Sure.
The next month? Like, first I'll have enough to work.
And I guess maybe some feedback from the folks that were at either the Maryland or the DC meetings. Did a meeting before work, did a breakfast meeting work, or?
I mean,
or sort of just the general group, does that seem like a legitimate way to get the most people? I think it might, especially for the Fed, since you're going to be coming down here to work in most cases anyhow.
They provided a good breakfast.
First,
the only one way to know.
I think my only comment was, I admit I was kind of frank at the time, so maybe I wasn't paying very much attention, but I seem to remember that the lead time on when the meeting actually was kind of short. I mean, it does help to have, like, I know it may sound like a lot, but like an accessible week, and I'm not sure we had that with this.
Yeah,
I think the more lead time you can give people, regardless of time of day, the better it is in terms of making sure you can get it on your calendar, and that if you have to move something else, you can.
Duly noted. I think we were kind of coming at this from both ends, and I think it'll hopefully be a little bit easier the second time around, but that's helpful to know, actually. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments about the mic?
Related to the topic of reappointment, I wanted to share with the group that my term is ending at the end of December, and I'm not going to be applying for reappointment because of personal commitments now, needing to scale back a little bit on my evening volunteer commitments. And I share this mainly to encourage folks, if you know folks from Arlington that haven't applied yet to be on RAC, that you think would be good, to encourage them to do so. I have wonderful colleagues from Arlington representing us, but I just wanted to share with the group, and it was a tough decision, but I think not a decision we made at all. I'll still be here for a couple more months, but just wanted to share that.
Yeah, I do think I speak to everyone that people certainly miss any intelligence and commitment and passion has been.
Can I move we adjourn early?
Yeah, we can. I was just going to say, if there are no other comments in open mic, we're going to adjourn. Okay.
Sorry. Nice. Come on. We never had.